Hello and welcome to Dyslexia Explored, where we explore people's dyslexia stories. Today, I have a lady from California who over her years has got a sociology degree, worked with children, worked in tech for 20 years, became a project manager in that world, but then went away to follow a passion for design to development and ended up crafting things by hand, bespoke handbags and jewelry by hand, and then discovered in that process that she had dyslexia. So I'd really like to introduce Lisa Ramos. Lisa, it's great to have you here, and I'm looking forward to hearing your story.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to share my story with everyone.
So tell us a little bit about what you're doing right now. So you're in California and yes. You're a crafts person, an artisan creator, yes. Aren't you?
Yes.
So describe us a little bit about what you do and how things work in your world right now.
Absolutely. So I hand make leather bags and I also hand make jewelry. So not only do I sell my work online, but I am a traveling artist. So I work probably about 9 months out of the year. I'm traveling, working on the weekends, and I'm doing various art shows and festivals throughout California. And I display my work. And after the shows, I come back to my studio, which you probably can see behind me, and I create. So I'm constantly on the road and I'm also creating, which is my happy place.
So have you got a bag that you could maybe show us to describe what you do?
Yes, I do. I have an Italian leather handbag and it's all handmade. What makes my bags really unique is it's designed with one piece of leather, the body of the bag. And on this particular one, it's a beautiful vegetable tanned Italian leather. And then this is a little closure element that I've designed.
So it's a bit like jewelry, that closure element. And you've got some jewelry on as well that is designed by you?
Yes. These are real 14 karat gold hoop earrings that I hand make. And then these are just really beautiful faceted crystals. And what's kind of fun about these is you can take off the element. So you could wear the hoop with or without the crystals, or you can change them. I'm really into versatility, which I think is always fun when you're designing and also when you're styling with an outfit. So
it's fascinating to see that you're now working with your hands when you were working in a tech company, project managing. That's quite a shift, and how very dyslexic of you. So let's just, now that we know where you're at the moment, let's rewind and go back in time. Maybe not that far, actually. But what was life like before you found out about dyslexia, your dyslexia, and what was the wake-up call? I find that fascinating. What woke you up to dyslexia? What was life like just before that?
Yeah, I think for me, life before that, and also just growing up and having life experiences, things have always taken me a lot longer to grasp. Anytime, even when I was at work, when I was working in the sports/internet world, you know, if I had to write an email, I would have to read it 10 times before it went out. I would have to get to work really early so that I could kind of be ahead of schedule so that if something came my way, I would be able to not have too much anxiety. I could get through it. So my life has always been, I plan a lot and I'm always early for things and I kind of overcompensate because I know that there are going to be things that come up that I wasn't expecting or that are taking me longer. So that's just something that I was experiencing that, you know, whether it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago, it's something that's really followed me. And the wake up call, it was kind of interesting. I was listening to a podcast in November 2021, and I was listening to an artist. She was being interviewed and she was talking about her dyslexic journey. And she had mentioned this book, The Dyslexic Advantage. And something just struck a chord with me, not only her story, but I always instinctively had this gut feeling that I was dyslexic because I had such challenges, learning differences as a child and even as an adult. So I went out, I got the book, started reading it on my Kindle, and immediately I was floored about everything that I was reading. So when I said a few seconds ago that I never thought that I could be dyslexic, or I thought that I could be dyslexic, the reason that I didn't think I was is because I had this notion that you had to read backwards. And I thought, I don't read backwards, so there's no way that I could be dyslexic. Well, I'm wrong. And after reading that book more than once and listening to people's stories, there were so many patterns and so many similarities in this book that I experienced. I mean, just probably 90% of them. And so I knew this all made sense now, why I struggled so much. And it was actually very relieving and comforting when I discovered this, because, you know, growing up as a young child struggling academically and even through my adulthood, I just never felt smart enough. And I had this hidden secret in my mind that, gosh, if anybody finds out how stupid I am, this is really going to be embarrassing. So I really have to try the best that I can to kind of keep this under wraps, you know, and just keep working hard and just plow along. But hopefully no one will really know that you're really not that smart. And so after reading this book, I just thought, you know what, this all makes sense. Just the way that I process information and learn is just different. And this is a wonderful thing. It's totally okay. And I am smart. I'm not the stupid kid that I thought that I was. So that was really, it was really life-changing for me. So I'm excited that I discovered it. I wish I would have discovered it a little bit earlier, but that's okay. That's the way things happen organically.
Yeah, I always find it interesting to hear people's stories who have discovered their dyslexia in their midlife, because a lot of people who are like you and me, I discovered my dyslexia midlife. I'd always thought I might be a little bit dyslexic, you know, just a teeny wee bit dyslexic. But then in adult life, you kind of think, well, what's the difference? Why? What's the point of knowing it in your adulthood? I'm not at school anymore. It just affects you at school. But then I went on a journey and realized, gosh, actually, maybe there's other people who think like me that I can learn from, like Richard Branson and so on. Maybe they've got techniques that I can learn from because we've got similar brains. What was your thoughts when you found out you had dyslexia? Did you think, well, what's the point? Is it relevant, etc.? Or what were your feelings with regard to finding it in midlife?
Yeah, I mean, I was, like I said, I was actually excited after I found out. I wanted to learn more. I wanted to understand the neurology side of how a dyslexic mind works, because it would be wonderful for people, whether it's a child or a teenager or an adult, to understand it. And I feel like if you have an understanding of it, it makes difficult situations easier, because you can, instead of getting caught up in the emotional side of, oh my gosh, I'm not smart enough, I can't figure this out, if you understand how you process information, it will actually help you adapt better in that situation. And I sometimes will even openly tell people now, you know what, I need you to repeat that. I'm dyslexic. I process information a little differently. So could you say it a little slower? And I can be in situations now that used to be really uncomfortable and have more confidence about being open about it, because so many people don't understand it. And we want to educate people, not only those that have it and those that don't. So I'm trying to just learn more and more about it and be an advocate in the community, and also to explain to people, educate them about it. I think it would really help everybody. So
yeah. So you had your wake-up call from a podcast, and then the Dr. Brock and Fernet ID's book. They were on the podcast, been on a few times.
Yes, I listened to that podcast.
Yeah, the last one, last time they came on, it was great speaking to them. And the next question is, what's been your challenge with dyslexia? Because a lot of people have an assumption with dyslexia. Oh, if you're dyslexic, then the words on the page must jiggle around for you. They don't for me, and they don't for 95% of people with dyslexia. But the effect of dyslexia is slightly different and affects people in different ways. Often the first time we notice this effect on our life is in when we're learning to read and learning to write and so forth. But for you, what do you think, you've mentioned a few of those, but what do you think are the main challenges you've faced that have stemmed from your dyslexia?
Yeah, I think the main challenges for me have been reading and writing, and you need to know how to do that throughout your schooling and also throughout your different careers. So that was always a challenge for me. If I had to read about a project, I had to get to work really early and read it several times. I would have to map out certain things so that I could understand the concept and not get caught up in maybe the three or four words I didn't understand. So that's always been a real big challenge for me, is just getting through the reading and the writing. And in my writing has gotten better, but boy, let me tell you, it has been a lifelong struggle. It just has. And if you start asking me all the rules about the English language, forget it. I can't even tell you. I cannot tell you. So that's been probably my biggest challenge is the reading and the writing over the years. Yeah.
What kind of rewards have you got from it? What do you think are the abilities, you know, that you've got from your way of thinking? How have you seen that in your life?
Yeah, definitely the silver lining in this and the rewards and the advantages would be, I'm not scared of failure. I am used to working really, really hard, which is great as an entrepreneur. So if something doesn't work out or something fails, just get right back up and do it. So that's been really wonderful. And I think also to just being a big picture thinker, that has been incredible. That's one of my biggest strengths, is to be able to go in and look at something and see the big picture and not get distracted by all the little tiny fine details. So that's definitely been a bonus, is to be able to have that big picture thinking.
I'd really love to sort of drill down into the way you think and the way you create as an artist and your flow. You did this in 2013. You mentioned that you did this design to development training, and you've learned a lot about, you know, what makes you tick. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what you've discovered that you take for granted in the way that you work and do things that maybe other people struggle with within your actual craft and work?
Sure. Well, just to go back a little bit, when I was starting to design and develop, I was really just kind of studying independently on my own. And so once I started to do that and I started working with my hands, and I could see the benefits, because as I was learning independently, I was mostly doing, watching videos, doing a little reading, because I've always shied away from wanting to learn new skills, because I thought, well, you can't write very well, and you can't really read that great, so you can't go back to school. So once I started realizing on my own and seeing, wow, I could actually learn this and create this, this is unbelievable, it gave me the confidence, and it just gave me the drive to keep going. And that was really this light bulb moment that I had never experienced before. It wasn't only just a self-confidence thing. It was, wow, all these years I've been held back in my head thinking I can't do something, and this is unbelievable. So I just dove into it and kept going. And then as it started growing, I thought, wow, this is incredible. Just keep doing it, keep at it. And so that's what I started doing.
Is that because you were learning more visually through videos and practical demonstrations and so on?
Yes, 100%. I'm much better through storytelling, visually seeing, and then just getting in there and working with your hands. Because I always say, you know, you could go to school for 10 years and learn something, but you have to go in there and construct it. And so for me, getting in there and working with my hands and constructing things, that is when the creativity starts. And there's a lot that can happen as it's starting and even in the middle of it. So that's something that's been, to me, just really fascinating. And when I'm designing, I usually visually can see it. I can see it, how it's going to function. If it can actually, you know, you can have this beautiful idea of something, but when you go to build it out, it might not work because there could be 10 different things. So I understand, usually before I start building something out, I understand the challenges that are going to go along with that. So I think about that before I start building it out, kind of the bird's eye view. Some people call it the 3D thinking. So that's really, really helped.
And in the Dyslexic Advantage mind strengths, they've got this material reasoning.
Yes.
And you're describing kind of literally material reasoning. You can imagine the leather or the material, imagine how it would react or be held or respond to different situation. There's quite a lot of material reasoning going on there, isn't there?
There is. And even when you start getting into metalsmithing and doing stone setting, all these different things as you're building this element, there's so many things that you have to think about that can go wrong. And I love that because it's then that's where the creative aspect really, you're really challenged. And that's the one thing that I really love about the design world is you can just really conceptually think about it in your brain, for me, without having to write it all out. And then when I go to do it, I've thought about most of the things already. And it's easier to design and to develop that way.
It's kind of like a flight simulator in your mind. You know, you can simulate how something might work or go wrong and what you might do about it. And you kind of make the mistakes in your head. And then when you've got the material, people start to say, how did you manage to do that? Because you're not making some of the most more basic mistakes because you've kind of role played them in your mind first and skipped over them. Is that what's happening?
Yes, 100%. Absolutely. And the more obviously you start working with your hands, those strengths get better and better. And you can look at something that you might have an idea about and just go, oh, wait, no, that's not going to work. Oh, but if you do this or that. And I actually saved it if you want to see it. I do, since my memory, I have a really hard time with fine detail, remembering things. So everything that I do is fairly organized where I can go back almost like a recipe, see a picture of something and have some key points. So then I don't have to worry about forgetting it. And they're very simple key points that maybe only I can understand my language, but that's something else that I do, and technology has helped me with, obviously, just to be able to kind of create these little cheat sheet notes on all the different things that I do. So I can really expand pretty wide because I have these little tools that help me along the way.
Oh, tell us more about that. What's in your toolkit of favorite apps, techniques, or so on that really help you?
So I love, and I've been using this for a couple of, I want to say almost two decades. I love Google Docs. I have so many different things in Google Docs. One of my favorite things that I do is I have something called like a link resource directory. So let's say somebody gives me different specs on needles for my industrial sewing machine or different points where metal might melt. all have these little links in there, and basically it could have hundreds of different links. When you click, say, I would go to the link resource page, I'd hit Control F, and if I put something like soldering, it'll show me the links with the soldering, and then I just click on it and boom, it takes me to that page. So I can do that on a huge scale. If I'm at a show and I forgot my business license, I have a special place, boom, in 2 seconds. Where, you know, you see people kind of shuffling around. Oh, I don't know. It's like, for me, it's quick. Or, oh, what's your next show, Lisa? Hold on, it's right there. And so that's the one thing that I just really love about technology is it allows me to have another brain.
Well, that's, have you heard about the building a second brain movement?
No.
No, I've got the book here, Building a Second Brain.
Oh, okay.
By Tiago Forte. And then I've also got the Dyslexic Advantage book as well. They're just sitting on my desk. What you've just described is building a second memory, a digital memory. You know, we've all got digital files, but often it's not a digital memory, because it's one thing storing something, but it's another thing being able to find it and recall it. That's when you've got a memory.
Yes.
And building that digital memory so something's immediately at your fingertips actually gives your brain a lot of freedom, because you can let go. Because your brain's not for holding ideas, it's for having them. And if you're holding too many of them, there's not enough space to have them. And so you're decanting them into this digital memory using Google Docs.
Yes, 100%. And I do it with everything. If I am making these hoop earrings, I have literally a spec sheet on everything. And it's online. It's also in my folder. If I want to work on that project, I just pull it out. I can look at it very quickly and get on, because I love focusing on efficiency, because then it reduces the stress and I have more creative time. So I try to keep things as organized as possible. It didn't initially start out that way so much, but as you get more and more into your business and more into designing, if you don't do that, boy, you're going to be spending a lot of time finding stuff. So it's really helped technology tremendously.
This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com, which helps you organize yourself creatively with a productivity system for Apple devices. What else do you do?
I do apps. I mean, on my phone, of course, still use Google Docs. I do my own website, which is pretty extensive. If I don't know how to do something, I'll learn how to do it, and then I'll put it up on my website. So I do all of that. And I've learned a tremendous amount on the tech side by creating my own website. And let me see what else. I mean, I have to-do lists and things like that, but that's all on my Google Docs, like a Word doc.
Yeah.
So all those things, you know, if technology goes down, I'm going to be a little scared, but
Well, I mean, often people with dyslexia are the early adopters of technology, because we kind of need it more than others.
You know,
we need to externalize our thoughts, externalize our memory, just empty that brain so there's space to create. Our brains are much more idea machines than they are information holders.
Yes.
So I'm really interested in your, so you're in your workshop right now. I can see, is that your workshop behind you?
It is, yeah.
I can see lots of tools. Are they kind of leather working tools? And then there's a big industrial sewing machine there. Is this where you make the handbags?
Yes. And I have a really great, unfortunately, you can't see it. It's off to my right. And I have one of these big Mac desktop computers, so it's kind of hard to pick up. But right to my left, and I write about this in my blog. I have like a little studio tour on my blog. I have a big workbench with a big microscope and a pulse arc welding machine and all my tools and hammers and things like that. And then downstairs, I have in the garage a big soldering area, because it gets really like lots of chemicals and dust and dirt stuff. So yeah, this is my space where I spend a lot of time. I don't know if you can see. I'll turn it a little bit. I can see a little.
Yeah, I can see it a bit. I can't see the computer, but that's great. And tell So what's the story been like? Tell us a little bit about what it's like making handbags in California. What's the story? Tell us a little bit about the story and the development of it. How many years has that been going, and how did it begin, and where are you at?
So in 2013, I was learning just how to work with my hands. And over the years, as I built my confidence and my designs were getting a little bit better, I created a small collection and launched it at the end of 2017. And then I knew, with my dyslexic thinking, I knew, you know, I could have all these beautiful things, but I have to have a strategy on building my customer base. So I knew going into focusing on online sales would be extremely challenging. I just knew, because I had a lot of experience in that sector. So I started doing shows. So basically what that means is, on the weekends, I get up really early. My days usually start at 4 or 5 a.m. and I head to a show. I set up a tent and do a little storefront and sell my work. And so I do that on the weekends. And then during the week, I'm creating my pieces. And so I think if you go back and you look at when I first started, it's going on just about 6 years. When you look at my first collection, you can see the progress. It's become much more sophisticated, which I'm excited about. So in my business, I just keep doing the shows, building my customer base. And then when I'm in the studio, I'm focusing on getting better at my craft and also learning new skills so that my pieces can be, you know, more sophisticated and just keep expanding on the creative side. So that's really how it started.
What kind of price point are your bags at? I'm intrigued by how much do they cost?
So my bag, the price point is usually about $350 to $600.
Okay.
Yes. I don't mass produce. So what I'm doing is I do a small collection of bags. And then when it comes to my jewelry, the price points usually, like, you know, I have some things that are, you know, $50 and up, but usually my average, when someone comes and buys a piece, it's anywhere between $75 up to $600. So it just depends who's buying.
So do you make like one design, and what do you make, like 10 of them at once or 5 of them at once? Or do you do it in a batch, as it were, and then you've got, or are they individually? How does it work?
Great question. So if we're looking, we'll start with jewelry. If we're doing jewelry, if I'm going to focus on rings, then I will work on a batch of rings. Even if the rings might slightly be different, I'm pretty much working within that skill set. The same thing with earrings and pendants, I do that. And then when I do my handbag production, I usually take a month, anywhere from 1 month to 3 months, and just focus on that skill set so that I'm not distracted. I can just really focus on that. So that helps with the creating process, doing it that way.
Gosh, you've got some great executive function skills in terms of keeping yourself organized and focused and so forth. That's a great strategy to just say, no, I'm going to do leather right now and concentrate on the bags and so on. That's brilliant.
Yeah, because I know that it's easy to get distracted with all these things, because I do, I'll be talking to someone and an idea will come up and I'm like, okay, try to focus on the conversation here. So what I try to do is, you know, really say, okay, this is what you're going to do today. You're going to do it from this time frame, and you're going to stick with it. And then, you know, on this day, you only have this much time, so you're going to do this. So I'm good at doing that. And also too, for me, being dyslexic, having structure really, really helps. Having structure, and now when something's comes up as a surprise, I have a little harder time with it because I get so hyper-focused, and I don't want to get out of that, Because if I have to get out of that, then it can take some time to not be distracted. So yeah, I try to keep it super structured.
If you don't mind me, I'd love to know more about handbags. And I'm sure there'll be people really interested in handbags listening. You know, tell me a bit about the leather that goes involved. There's this mysterious thing, you know, not all leathers are the same. They're different qualities. And whenever I've spoken to people about leather, they get quite animated and excited about all the differences. And tell us a little bit about handbag and leather and what goes into the material of the handbag and how you choose the material.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it goes back to, I've always loved handbags as a child. I loved these really fancy designer bags and I loved them. But one of the biggest problems that I noticed as I've aged is that some of these bags are so gorgeous, but they're so heavy. So how do you carry this gorgeous bag that's really heavy? So when I started studying leather, there's just so many different types of leather. I wanted to find a leather that, a couple things, that isn't so heavy. That was one thing. And then also to find a leather that when you sew it, it has a nice effect when you sew it. Because if the leather is too thick, it's going to be heavy, as I said. And also too, it's going to look a little different, that you're going to have a wider stitch, all that sort of thing. And so when you're looking at leather, you're going to look at the thickness. You're going to look at how they make it. So how it's tanned, how it's processed. You have a front side of leather and you have a belly side of leather. So these are things when I'm picking a leather, how is the belly side going to look? So when I'm making my bags, I don't line my bags, because when you start lining, then you get into adding materials, which makes it heavier. And then you also are starting to, you have to sew into the leather. So the bags start to look different because you might have to fold it. So all these little things, when you're going to create something, you want to think about the different types of leather that you want to use, and then which ones are you going to pick. So that's kind of how I approach it. Some people approach it like, okay, well, this is the most expensive leather, so I'm going to work with this. I don't approach it that way. I approach it more of like, how's it going to function? And then of course you have to look at the price point, but you can, for me, I can tell a difference between really beautiful leathers and leathers that aren't as expensive.
So what's the difference in weight then from a handbag that where they've not thought about the leather and it's just heavy, and one of yours, what's the difference in weight?
It's the weight. Well, I'll give you an example. My husband has this briefcase, and I'm not kidding you. It must be 3 or 4 pounds. It's super, super thick. And it's for that purpose, it's great, because if you're going to have a bag that you're putting lots of books in, then you do need a thicker leather. So for me, what I tell my customers is my bag leathers are thinner. So they're used for, you know, putting your essentials in. You're not going to put 10 different bags in this, or 10 different books in this bag, because it would be too heavy. So on the bag that you saw that I had earlier showed everybody, that bag is a thinner grade Italian leather. And it has this, I'll kind of pull it up again. It has this, I don't know if you can see, it has kind of this little slight shimmer to it.
Can you lift it up? Yes.
You can see. So this is vegetable tan. So vegetable tan is different than chromed tan. The tanning process is just different. This is one of my most expensive leathers that I have, but it's very lightweight, but it's in the way they treat it, this is embossed. So they do an embossing that has like a crocodile or animal effect. And it's really light. Now, if I had a thicker bag, I would probably be holding it with two hands because it would be too thick. So that's what this looks like.
And I'm interested to know, you know, a lot of people with dyslexia are great craftspeople. You know, they're really good at crafting. I mean, even like Steve Jobs had dyslexia and he crafted Apple. Johnny Ives, dyslexia, and he created the iPhone and the iPad and the Macintosh. dyslexia traits come in to play when you're crafting and you're thinking. So we talked a bit about, you know, the dynamic of making it. Are there any other areas you've gone, oh gosh, this is something I'm really good at that other people aren't natural at?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I think about and I have over the years is I'll ask myself, like, why aren't bag manufacturers making lighter weight bags? Why is the jewelry industry making all these really dainty little rings when there are women that have big fingers? So I'm asking myself, I call it like functionality questions, but these are just questions where sometimes they're kind of just doing what they've been doing for years and years. And maybe they're not thinking, well, wait a minute, you know what? Maybe someone that's shopping, they don't want to carry a really, really heavy bag. They want to be able to carry a lighter bag. Or, you know, someone that's older, they just say they can't wear rings anymore because their fingers are too big. Well, that's not true. It's just, it's not out there. So what I try to do is think about things that I don't see and things that I can offer, you know, as an artist and in the market to people. So that's like the, and I feel my dyslexia has helped me with that in terms of like big picture and out of box thinking or creative thinking. And so I think that answers that question.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. That makes a lot of sense. It's fascinating to think back, you know, if you think of dyslexia at the base level, it's a way of processing information differently. We're much more manual thinkers when it comes to processing information, much more intentional about processing information than autopilot and automatic. And the net result is, you know, I remember I found it hard to learn to tie my shoelaces. I found it hard to learn to tell the time. Were you the same?
Yes, and left and right, forget it. And I still have to say, okay, my wedding ring's on my left. And I get, and I can't remember names. I'll have a customer come up to me and I'll say, I don't remember your name, but I remember you bought a ring for your sister. Her birthday was in October and you were kind of having a tough time. You're going through a divorce. And she's like, how do you know? Like, how do you remember that? I said, but I can't remember your name. So I can remember stories, but I can't remember the name. Even restaurants, I struggle with.
Yeah. I'm just the same, Lisa, with names as well. I kind of remember principles and relationships more than the details. You know, you just remembered the relationship between her and her sister and the divorce and the dynamics and principles going on there, but forget the name. And in many ways, that's more important to you than the name. That person's important to you, but sometimes it can come across like you don't think they're important because actually they are, but you're remembering what you think are important things about that person.
Yes, 100%. And when I read a book, can't remember the characters' names. I know the gist of the book, but I now as I've gotten older, I don't beat myself up over it. I just am like, you know, enjoy reading the book and understand the concept and just visualize what's happening. Don't get caught up in not remembering the fine details. And that's another thing that I love about discovering about being dyslexic. It's okay that you can't remember those fine details. You'll still get through life fine. You're going to do okay.
Yes. And I find it amazing that you can read a novel. You've understood everything. You've read every name.
Yes.
And the character's name has been repeated, what, 300-500 times at the end of the book? It starts with L. It starts with L.
Yes. And don't ask me what the name of the book is. I finally learned to just have fun and read. And I read actually a lot, but I cannot even tell you. I don't even know if I could name five titles. I couldn't. I literally can't. I'll read it. Yeah. And even if I read it 10 times, I'm still not going to remember it. So I'm only going to read it twice and then get on with it.
Talking about reading, have you ever found this where you read a book that has got all these different concurrent stories going on at once? They flick from one chapter in one setting to another chapter in another setting, and then another chapter in a different setting. Some people like those books, but I find them infuriating because I'm like, I just got into this. Why are you pulling me off to somewhere else right now? And I can't even remember, because once you get into the book, you're meant to remember where it linked back to 6 chapters ago when that person was started. But is that your experience as well?
Yes, it can be confusing. And also what I do is I find an author that I like and I just read every book. And then once I've gone through all the books, then I'll read another author. And I have to like the style of writing.
Yes.
As a child and even through adulthood, my vocabulary has been something I've always had to work on. So I don't want to get these books that are so sophisticated with all the language. I don't want to feel stressed when I'm reading the book. So I'll find an author that just the way he or her writing style works for me, I'll stick with. And I'll even sometimes go back and reread the book because I can't remember it. Or I'll remember like the gist, but not like, oh, I forgot about this and that. So
yeah. I sometimes feel I'm really lucky with films because, you know, once I'm 5 years away from watching a blockbuster film like Mission Impossible, I'll put it back on again and I won't remember it. My wife's like, you watched that. Why are you watching that again? I'm like, oh, it's just like a new film to me again. Oh, wow, that was amazing.
Yeah, she just 100%. I'm very similar. I can watch a whole series of something and then go back and rewatch it again and pick up new things that I had not seen before or I just had forgotten. And I think that's also too, once I've accepted that, I'm like, okay, it's okay. It's just who I am and how I process information.
It's interesting that because it ties back to that question of why, that you were saying, why do people do it this way? Why is this happening? Because our brains, I believe, our brains with dyslexia are wired to forget these sorts of things.
Yes.
So that as a designer or a creator, you're not just going on autopilot. You are reinventing or reapproaching the material again, the circumstances again. And if circumstances change, you come up with a new solution and adapt it. And so you're constantly being trained by the way your brain works to constantly adapt to new situations and bring solutions to that that are bespoke rather than generalized.
Right. No, 100%. Yeah. And I even do that, even just in my, like when I'm doing my shows, I've changed things and fine-tuned them over the years just to make things smoother or better or to increase sales, bring in more customers in my area, just like constantly thinking of new ways to refine it. I'm always thinking about that. I mean, in the middle of the night, I'll wake up and say, oh my gosh, I have to do this. This is going to be much better. I appreciate tracking things on numbers, looking at numbers so that I can go back and look at the data and have comparisons. I like that a lot. Even though I'm not an accountant, I do appreciate just seeing that because from that you can draw, you can get creative. It can inspire some creativity on how to.
You can see patterns.
Yes.
You can see patterns and adjust. Yeah. Because often we are pattern recognizers. Human beings are pattern recognizers. Mm-hmm. You know, like often people with dyslexia are just more tuned into identifying patterns because it's a survival mechanism in many ways. Because if you're not relying on details, a lot of people relying on knowing the details. With dyslexia, you're letting go of the details in order to focus in on big picture patterns. And the patterns are the important things. Do you find that in the way you're thinking?
100%. In fact, when I read that book, The Dyslexic Advantage, I was floored when they started talking about the patterns because I do that all the time in my conversations with people. If I'm analyzing a situation, I'll immediately see or feel the patterns 100%. I do it in my business. Absolutely. And it helps because I think once I've identified that I do think like that, and it's just the way that I think, then I'm even more open to it, to going back and analyzing and looking. It's helped me a lot.
So if we're talking about going back and analyzing patterns and the big picture, sometimes I ask people, if you could go back to your younger self, what age would you go back to? And what message would you give your younger self? And I want you to imagine, maybe you give yourself a card, like a greetings card. What would it say on the front of the card? And what would be written on the inside to yourself?
Okay, now it may sound silly. It's pretty simple. I would say that the way that you learn information in life and in school is different than the majority. It's actually a gift, and you are really smart. Don't get caught up in comparing yourself with others, because you are very different. You're unique, and you know you're going to have to work harder because you are different, but there are really good things that are going to come your way. I promise. It would be something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that okay?
What would be written on the front? What would be the
Front?
Or what would be drawn on the front? What would be the picture on the front or the writing on the front?
It would say something.
And how
like,
old would you be?
I would say fifth grade. Probably fifth grade. And it would say, exciting things are gonna come your way. Be patient.
Ah, love it. Exciting things are going to come your way. Be patient. Fifth grade, how old are you then? 10, 11?
I think so. Yeah, I think. Right. And I put that in there because I'd be old enough to already gone through some uncomfortable things academically, just growing up, feeling different. But I'd also be getting ready, not quite for junior high, but pretty close. So I feel like that would be a good age.
Yeah, great. Right. And what advice, I mean, I don't know, have you got children yourself?
I have stepchildren. They're older. So they're in their late 20s, early 30s. So, but I met them when they were school age, and they are very smart. They are not dyslexic. When I say they're very smart, we're all smart, but they're fine detail. They're opposite of me. They're really great test takers. Fine detail, and writing is exceptional. Reading.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, because a lot of people who have dyslexia, you know, it's pretty much, it's inherited, you know, you pass it down through your... So I often ask what advice people might give. So if you were to go back and from your experience as a child, what advice would you give parents of children with dyslexia?
You know, I think it would be similar to what I said with the card. I think if a parent has a child with dyslexia, explaining to them that their brains process information differently and that it's okay and that they are still going to exceed in life and they can still do great things, but they are going to have to work harder because of the way classrooms and teaching is. I feel like as a kid, going back to being dyslexic, if somebody had told me that, it would have helped ease the discomfort and it would help understand why things are such a struggle. Just those a few little sentences would have been extremely valuable. And to continue to deliver that message, because we often have to hear it more than once. I would encourage them to, you know, go into programs or use specific apps to be able to help build on those areas that they struggle with and then build up those areas so that they could survive easier in classroom situations.
One of your comments, you were talking about how you had to map things out, okay, to understand them. Mm-hmm. Do you do mind mapping? One of the questions I ask people is, what's been your experience of mind mapping in your life?
Yeah, in fact, I had to look that up when I kept hearing that term. For me, how I understand it is I do map things out. I always have. I've always just wanted to understand the components of how things come together. And then if you can understand that, then you can start putting in the pins and all the other little areas to then create it. But if you don't understand the conceptual part of it, then the fine details for my memory doesn't mean anything. So yeah. I feel like I have always approached that. I remember this is kind of a silly example, but it's an example probably in the last 8 or 9 years. We were in the process of doing a really big move. And I remember my husband saying, this is going to be a big project. And I thought, it's not going to be that bad because I already like knew, okay, now how are we going to, you know, get all this stuff over there and make it go smoothly. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to organize all the boxes and they're going to be with these little color coded dots. So then I'll know, okay, you know, this kid's room is red. This one is this. And I'll just write just some keyword. And so if I could just have that concept of being able to do it that way, then all the other things would be easy. So I've always kind of thought about it that way. Worry about the fine details later. Plus, I'm not going to remember the fine details. So does it matter? Unless I have my little cheat sheet in front of me.
It's been great to chat this over with you. What sort of things, you know, do you think you'd like to talk about that we haven't covered yet?
You know, I know we talked about this, but I think the one reason I really wanted to do this interview and speak more about just the topic of dyslexia is there's this stigma with it. You know, adults might think about it, or a child may think about it as being just really like, oh gosh, you've got dyslexia, or my child's got dyslexia. And I really want to, you know, I want to talk more about openly about, you know, being dyslexic is it's fine. It's totally okay. And in fact, there are some incredible advantages about it. And I think it's important to highlight that we all learn in a different way, and that how we learn isn't an intelligent gauge. That's so important. And, you know, I know we talked about it throughout our conversation, but I just want to highlight that more because I feel really fortunate that I had the strength and the confidence to be able to navigate through life, which is so challenging being dyslexic. But there are those children and adults that maybe have a harder time. Maybe, you know, they can't have the tutors or the supportive parent that's always there. So I think it's important to, you know, keep having these conversations. It can really help others. And I think it's important for non-dyslexic to learn more about it so that if you have a friend or a coworker that you're thinking to yourself, I've told this person my name 10 times, or I've told them about this 10 times, that they will have an understanding that this person isn't just being a jerk. It's their processing is entirely different, and be more inclusive as we're trying to do in this world. So I think that's the one thing that I really wanted to highlight.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Great way to end things. Lisa, it's been great to have you on Dyslexia Explored. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com. It's my day job when I'm not hosting this podcast. Tell me, do you know what you want to achieve in the workplace, but you're struggling with how to achieve it? Maybe you suspect some traits of dyslexia are getting in the way. Well, that's where Dyslexia Productivity Coaching comes in, because we give you a simple productivity system for your Apple devices that harnesses the creativity that comes with your dyslexia. It includes proven methods like note-taking, reminders, speech-to-text, mind mapping, and more, all tailored to your needs. It'll free up your time and help you achieve outstanding results. Book a complimentary call to discuss it with me, and if you do it soon, I may also be available to coach you personally via Zoom. So don't be shy, go to dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com or swipe up and book it now.